Welcome back to the Vermont's Last Theater podcast project, today featuring two poets, Jeannie and Steve Tomasco. Jeannie's books include Violet Hours, The Collect of the Day, Small Towns Along the Coast, Dovetail, and her newest chapbook, Dear Little Fist, just out from Red Bird. She's won the Council for Wisconsin Writers Lorene Niedecker Poetry Award, among other honors. Steve's book, And No Spiders Were Harmed, won first place in the Wisconsin Fellowship of Poetry Chapbook Contest. He's also won the Norbert Bly Poetry Award and most recently the Hal Prize. Steve and Jeannie also run their own publishing company, Bent Paddle Press, which we'll be talking about later on.
So, Jeannie, do you want to begin with a couple of poems?
Sure.
Talk a bit about where they came from, and I'll try not to clink the ice cubes too much here.
Okay. The first poem I'm going to read is from some poems I've been working on over the last year or two, actually, of some work I've been doing as I'm studying Rachel Carson. And so what it's evolved to at the moment, though I'm not really sure where it's going, is I'm trying to use her work as a springboard in various different ways to write poems. And some of them I've put together different erasures. And then as I read them over, sometimes I add a word that seems like it wants to be there. So some of them are maybe fragments of her writing. Some of them are erasures from a certain page of her writing. And then they're interspersed with things that I may have added. So I can't really tell you exactly what this one is because it's morphed many times. But I'll just start, and it actually doesn't have a title. Soft as a moth. Or was it the sea breaking? Grace, or was it the old story of the heart with its hinged wings? Shouldered away to the north, that island, half a mile out. Flyway of the snow geese, seahorse, whelk, clam. I felt like I threw you 100 sailboats. Only a narrow beach caught the steel sheen of silver, a thin ghost running to the sea, a quiver in the tide. When you doubt the world, let me read to you. Anemone, angel wing, Atlantic basket star, boat shell like a box with its lid between tide lines. Darling, the moon was clear glass, and I came to you carrying the sea in my arms.
So we don't know exactly which of those were. Well, almost all of those words are Rachel Carson's words.
Right? Most of them, but okay. I think why I was writing it one time and all of a sudden I came up with this line, I felt like I threw you 100 sailboats, and I have no idea where it came from. So that line was totally random and just wanted to be there.
Freedom.
So most of the other ones I think are variations of hers or different erasures that I did.
Are erasures of prose as common as erasures of poetry? I hadn't heard of
I'm trying to make poems out of prose.
Right. But I mean, it seems like...
Yeah, no, people usually do erase prose to get a poem.
All right, I thought they were...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's kind of what these are. And her writing is just so beautiful that when you read it, you can just feel it's the poetry of it, which it really lends itself to these sorts of things. Even just the words, like the anemone, angel wing, Atlantic basket star, those are from the thing at the end, you know, the glossary.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, at the end of Silent Spring.
Yeah. So they're just, you know, a list of words, and they're so pretty that, you know, they kind of work to do something, whatever they do.
And actually, excuse me for butting in, but
please do.
You mentioned Silent Spring, which is what Rachel Carson is best known for. But actually, she actually wrote, what, 3-4 books before that? Or maybe
Yeah, three
more.
Books about the sea.
Just, you know, a lot more descriptive, just books about the sea, the edge of the sea, not quite so sciencey, you might say, as Silent Spring. So, and that's really where it's sort of, you know, like I said, people, you just think of Silent Spring, but she had all this other body of work before that. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's where you're mostly taking this stuff from.
Yeah.
And also a little bit of, you know, her biography and stuff like that.
And then, so the darling part. So,
yes, I was going to ask you about the
darling. Yeah, so she had a very close relationship with her friend Dorothy. And when they wrote each other lots and lots of letters. And they were very affectionate, and they called each other darling. So as I'm writing these, I'm, you know, some of them I kind of imagine like what they would have said to each other. So that's why I added a lot of darlings to these poems.
Oh, it's not me.
How about one more, Jeannie?
One more. Okay.
For now, I mean.
So this poem is just called April 27th, 2013. And that was just whatever happened on that day, which you'll see. It has an epigraph. A list of birds seen on a given day is also a form of prayer. Brian Kimberling. Walking, we name the voices of tonight's pond, careful to capitalize the names as we say them. Great blue heron, sandhill crane, mallard, great horned owl. If you are praying the species, you need that sort of respect for the names. But if you are out walking, say tonight, and you walk past two snapping turtles in a twisted sort of dance near Stricker's Pond boardwalk, you don't need caps. Holding your breath is enough. Bufflehead duck, wood duck, northern shoveler. It's been a cold spring, and just today we planted peas and tomorrow potatoes. These are prayers too, you said, along with fixing the planters, and the nuthatches who flew into the hole in the tree, and the busy muskrats swimming away, leaving behind their crooked V-shaped wakes. Goldfinch, house finch, American robin, chickadee, northern cardinal, chickadee, chickadee, wrens will come soon. The juncos have flown north. The goldfinches are bright yellow again. We watched the turtles for a long time, and then you said, we won't have enough light to make it around the pond before dark. We will, I said, and you said you knew I was going to say that. It's strange who loves who. Barred owl, hermit thrush, song sparrow, and it's not that I want the whole world to be here, but sometimes on nights like this, I don't know why the whole world isn't.
Can I clap?
Can we both clap?
So that one, I feel like that a lot of times, you know, and probably a lot of people do when they're doing something that they love and they're really kind of glad that no one else is there, but you kind of wonder, why isn't everybody else here and why isn't this something that everybody wants to do when they're out, like, at the mall or doing something that isn't, like, my favorite thing.
Right. So. Well, now everyone is here hearing about it.
Yeah. So, but I'm sure everybody's had feelings like that, too. But
and Stricker's Pond?
That's here in Middleton.
Okay.
Yeah, we actually went this year and saw more mating snapping turtles.
So that was the twisted sort of dance.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Wondered about that. But now when you said you don't need caps, is that capital letters?
Or yeah.
You don't need hats.
Okay. Because
the birds in this poem are presented in initial caps. It's one of the benefits of rushing out and finding these poems to read them yourself is that you'll get to see exactly how they're laid out typographically. Well, Steve, you have talk a little bit about your science background. Do you want to start with, you want to read these in a particular order?
Let me start with the poem and then I'll talk a little bit about the poem. That's
the idea.
So this is one of those where the title just goes right into the poem. You said I should write more love poems, and I said, I'm sorry, but I've been thinking about sloths. Well, actually the moths that live on sloths snuggle into their fur, take the slow, slow ride through the rainforest. Once a week, the sloth descends to the forest floor, defecates. Female moths leap off, lay their eggs on the fresh feces, hop back on. Their young nourish themselves on the fetid feast, metamorphose into moths, fly up into the canopy to find their own sloths. They prefer the three-toed over the two-toed. Who can figure attraction? The algae-covered sloth fur is the only place they live, the only home the sloth moths know. It's a Darwinian thing, I know, but the word fidelity comes to mind. Commitment, patience. The world writes love poems all the time. So Yeah, well, the genesis for that poem is just inherent in the title. Jeannie once said to me, you should write more love poems. And that's what came about. I have no idea. This is one of those poems. I mean, it has been edited a lot, but it came out almost like it is in one shot.
Really?
I mean, you know, there's a lot of tweaking and stuff, but not anything drastically different, mm-hmm. which is an experience I have not had in a long time.
Really? Well, and you also tweaked it a bit right now because a couple of the words were different, which is one of the things I love about these mm-hmm. podcasts is that sometimes a poem will come out slightly different.
Well, it was also because I was reading that from memory.
Right.
So I might.
Yes.
But, long ago, we heard Max Garland, a former Wisconsin poet laureate, and he read one of his poems, which was actually much longer than this, and read it from memory. And I just remember being so impressed and thinking, I have to memorize at least one of my poems. So just a little bit of background is I do have a background in biology and including a master's in entomology. I also did some newspaper reporting and kind of done some different things. So science does tend to creep its way into a lot of my poems. And I like bringing science in, although sometimes I have to tone it down a little bit and make things more poetic.
Well, I was just going to say, if this came to you almost all at once, it certainly worked because, well, for one thing, as you note here, it has been published in 6 different venues and maybe more by now. And in fact, was most recently in Rosebud? Or?
Correct. That was the most recent place. It originally published in The Fiddlehead, a Canadian journal. It's in my chapbook, And No Spiders Were Harmed, mm-hmm. a couple anthologies. I don't want to go on.
Okay. Well, I love that one. I'm glad you chose that.
Thanks.
One.
So,
did you have to do research about the sloths when it all came out, or did you already know everything of all those facts?
I kind of knew some of that. I mean, I'd probably seen it on, you know, Nova or one of those shows, which, you know, I watch a lot. Or have read about them. I don't think I actually, it was in my mind, so, and I was thinking about sloths when I started the poem, so.
Well, I'm going to throw something in here which our sound engineer can decide whether he wants to keep in or not. Our sound engineer is Nick Barovic Hancock, and he has had hand-to-hand contact with sloths down in Costa Rica. Where they are apparently quite, some of them are quite tame.
There was a sloth sanctuary down there.
Yeah, I saw a show about people taking care of sloths that had been, when they're too young or something, and maybe their mother was run over by a car or something. Or,
yeah, sloth rescue.
Yeah.
We saw that.
And to think it's one of the 7 deadly sins. Actually, probably my favorite of the 7, to tell you the truth. Used to be gluttony and now it's sloth.
Well, okay, speaking of science, I guess I do have another one. Sciencey one here. It's also another one with insects. Caterpillar egg as universe. No one notices a life so small, a life whose world could comfortably fit inside this little donut of an hole, a life confined by the contours of a caterpillar egg. Welcome to the world of Trichogramma. A wasp so small 25 could line up and can across their name. Say wasp and people flinch, but no one ever quailed at Trichogramma. Oh, little chalcid, little dagger, your sting meant only for a caterpillar egg. You inject your own egg into that Lilliputian universe.
We should ask Jonathan Swift, I'm sorry. I'll talk about that.
Where your young will consume the embryo, will thrive at the expense of the would-be caterpillar, will grow and transform that space into a chalice of new wasps. Who will find more eggs to make more wasps? 10 million stories, unnoticed creatures whose small lives are as large as our ignorance.
Well, I'm glad I don't have to say anything about that one. Because I'm not sure there's anything to say after that. But I hope you have something to say, or maybe...
Well, it should say it all. You know, there are 1.5 million named species of insects, and we don't even really have information about a lot of them except for giving them a name. Mm-hmm. There are estimates of anywhere between 3 and 10 million insect species in the world, although disappearing as the fast as the rainforest disappears. You know, there's so many that, you know, again, like in the poem, think about wasps, and most people will think of this big yellow jackets or something that's going to sting you, and yet probably the vast majority of wasps and hornets are things you wouldn't even notice because they don't sting people. They may be these little almost microscopic things like Trichogramma, which are barely bigger than a caterpillar egg, which are pretty small. There's just all these lives out there just, you know, that most people don't know about. I don't know, that wasn't very profound. But
that was profound enough for me. Profound enough for our listeners. Well, what published in the, how is that pronounced?
The Aurorian.
Aurorian.
There's actually a journal, it's out of Maine, called the Aurorian. And then they, I don't know if they still have it, I haven't seen it for a while, but they also would put out a broadside called the Aurorian, which is where poems that maybe didn't quite fit in the Aurorian might end up in the Aurorian.
Their own publication.
Something, you know, maybe they're a little bit more out there.
Strange.
Mm-hmm. Maybe, yeah. Because the Aurorian is pretty...
I don't even know if it's still around.
I know the Aurorian is still around. I get emails from them. Mm. It's a good journal. Mm-hmm. I had poems in the Aurorian, too, not just the Aurorian.
Well, Jeannie, you're, among other things, a nurse. Yes?
Yeah, so this next one is my nurse poem.
Excellent. I wasn't thinking of that. I just thought, let's, I mean, we both have scientific backgrounds of a sort. So please, go ahead.
Yeah. So this poem I wrote after seeing a patient. I worked as a home health nurse, seeing patients around town for probably about 15 years. And so this is from one of those experiences. Given for John. Now is a worn street on the east side of town. Now is its sidewalk, its cracks, its dogs and women walking. Now is its talking yard to yard, its front porches, yawn-faced cats. Now is a day of luscious light, the Sunday night of it, fifth day into summer, the fried chicken potato salad of it, the friends, the table's easy laughter. Now is how a body returns from darkness, how a heart, how a thought. Now is how to say given. And this, the simplest grace, a wood floor shining with given, the garden gate repaired. Every blade of grass is green with it. Now is a plate heaped high with it. And now, now is the whole blue onrushing world. And I can just remember that night when I read this, because it was a summer night, and this guy was, he was home from a sudden, unusual illness where I think he... I don't remember the details, but he had some kind of brain infection that came on really fast. And he was hospitalized for, I don't know, a couple of weeks maybe, and then had come home to be on some antibiotics at home. But he was just so grateful to be home. And he came home to this environment where, you know, there were friends coming over, bringing food for him. He was at his home with his wife. And then, of course, I had to show up and give him his IV antibiotics. So, but it was right in the middle of, you know, his life. And everybody was so nice. And actually, they invited me for supper and I ate with them. And there was, I can't even remember, some one of their people knew people that I knew. And so it was kind of interesting. But so they were just so grateful and generous. And then I think he was just, you know, like you sort of get a second chance at life and you realize how something like that can happen out of the blue and you don't know how it's going to end. So that is what inspired this poem.
Well, you capture so much, I think, in that line. Now is how a body returns from darkness. Mm-hmm. Even not knowing the exact background, it seemed... Well, knowing that you're a nurse, I just had the idea that it was someone who was in recovery of some kind, and you weren't sure how long it was going to last, but you got to share that time with them.
I've always really loved that poem, and like the line you just mentioned is very good, and maybe this isn't one of the more deep lines, but I've just always loved yawn faced cats. I just get this image of cats on the porch yawning.
Yeah, and there were cats. It was like a, you know, East Side Street over there, and and there were, I remember there were cats on porches. So I didn't make it up. It was a true story.
But it's a great way to describe them.
Yeah, so let's see. Maybe I'll read Our Lady of State Street next.
Okay. This is a prose
poem. This is a prose poem. It's sort of a little bit of a series, which actually, well, should I talk about it before or after?
Oh, sure. Yeah. And then you can talk about it after, too, if you want. Okay. But sure, go ahead.
So there was a Mexican grocery store up in Sauk City, and they had a...
Which is now the restaurant?
Yeah, oh, okay. Yeah. But they don't have the gumbo. It was kind of like a gumbo machine where you put in two quarters and you could get an Our Lady sticker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they had... So I got one because it was cool. And on the back, it said, like, collect all 10. So this was, like, the Virgin of Guadalupe. And then there's other ones that, you know, are... I don't even remember what they are now. But it said, collect all 10. And, you know, this was a certain one of those. So I thought, well, that was, you know, I mean, I've gotten in trouble by some of these poems, by people that think I'm, like, making fun of Catholicism.
Oh,
when actually I have, you know, really deep respect for it.
I don't think anybody who knows your work could say that you make fun of Catholicism or any other religion. But.
So, and I think it's just more like, sometimes I think we take ourselves seriously, too seriously, and we have to sort of laugh at the things that we do. So that's what this one is. So hopefully people notice the cockeyed reverence.
Yes. That's
or what you, that's whatever you might call it. Yeah. So this is Our Lady of State Street. So I go to this reading down at the bookstore and afterwards meet a friend of a friend. She's unlocking her bike, and I notice a shiny decal on the crossbar, half under a long sticker. Holy, I say, it's the Green Virgin of Guadalupe, number 4 out of 10. I have her too, along with numbers 2, 5, and 9. She wants more, she says. She got this one in a gumball machine in the Sauk City Mexican grocery. That's where I've been going for my virgins. But it's too late. Things have changed up a bit. And I tell her about the conversion to minions and skulls and tattoos of biker chicks. She prefers virgins, I can tell, as Our Lady shines there on her crossbar, sparkling. Our Lady. Our Lady of State Street. Our Lady of Biker Chicks. Our Lady. Bless her ride home. So she had the same sticker that I had. So I thought, wow, what is that doing there? And then that's how we got into it, and we actually got him at the same place.
She's trying to climb in the bag, so that's making a lot of sense.
It is in the bag.
That's not really a problem. Is it? Yeah. Makes it seem more real.
The cats.
Yeah.
The cats in the bag.
Yes, we are. The internet will love that.
Oh. So, Steve, what do you want to do?
Is that my turn?
I think so. I don't know if you want to do Close and Holy Time. We've been talking a bit about religion, although I think both of your poems have religious feel to them to me, even if they're not explicitly about anything to do with faith or questioning one's faith, but.
Well, this poem, actually I have two that I suppose could be they're sort of on that theme. They're also a little bit on my, what I've called, I don't know, I have a handful of poems that I call my family poems.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we all, well, not everybody, but often write about our families, moms, dads.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a poem or two about, you know, with my brother in them. But anyway, these two would come from this. Even if you can
soundtrack
edit that
provided
out,
by Ellie.
It's annoying me.
By Ellie in the bag, okay.
Sorry, Ellie. So So anyway, well, this pretty much the situation in this poem is self-explanatory. So.
Oh, and this is another one where the title goes in.
Title going into the poem, and I'll talk about that at the end, maybe. That sure was a close and holy time for a bunch of atheists, he said, soon after Mom died. There were stories, there was silence, there was Mom's last joke. We played Peter, Paul, and Mary at her bedside, John Lennon's Imagine. A year and a half later, we scattered our parents' ashes in a high Colorado meadow. Light and water, thin air, two hemlocks growing out of a stump, and a little June snow where my brother spelled out Mom and Dad with their dust. We had no grand plans. We found places by whim. Later, we hiked up to a waterfall, cast more of their elements into the river, and you pointed out a rock with a face you said looked like Mom. And it did. Maybe a benediction or another one of her jokes. Rambling down, we played like kids, threw sticks into the torrent, watched them rumble and disappear in the turbulent, animate water. I stopped, turned back. Douglas fir and aspen framed the waterfall. Sun splintered through the branches and leaves, incandescing the mist. Saw the world broken and holy there. You know, I'm just going to let that sit as it is. So. Yeah. I briefly, with another poet, Ron Serwin, we were going to be trading poems, and each poem was supposed to play off the other one as just a way to get us to write. Mm-hmm. It didn't go very long, but this is one poem I got out of that little project. It's called Say This. Say, we humans are not good. Say, we humans are not prayers. Say, when we pray to be good, it's only because we wish to be thought of as good, whether or not we are. Good never thinks of us. Good is not good at being human. Good hides under the pews. Good sidles across the road and goes into a bar. In the last year or so of her life, my mother, when saying goodbye, would say, "Be good," then pause and say, "No, be bad," and keep your middle finger ready. You never know when you may need to use it. Humans are salt and water. There's another part I can't remember, even though I've prayed to. Elephants remember the bones of their dead. Elephants would be good at prayer if they needed to be. Humans are bone deep in their tears. Say this is a prayer we humans are not good at. Say humans are no good at prayer. Say humans are the punchline in someone else's joke. My mother would be using her middle finger at our president. If, but, oh.
Well, I guess we just dated ourselves, didn't we?
I had a question about the last line.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't. It's one of those lines where, like, you don't know if you're supposed to understand it and wrap your head around it or if you're just supposed to listen to it. But I can't quite wrap my head around the meaning of it.
The so, punchline in someone else's right. joke.
Did you mean for that to have a certain meaning, and it's probably just me?
No, it's not just you. The only thing, it's sort of relating to the second stanza. There's the line where good sidles across the road and goes into a bar. And I was thinking about, you know, there's all those jokes, blah, 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 goes into a bar.
Right.
So it's just sort of reflecting that. I think in a different version, I actually had something about goes into a bar and something about a joke there, but then I took that out.
Okay.
I left it in, even though I don't know exactly what I meant by it, to be honest.
Okay. I was just
but
wondering.
It's sort of, I mean, there's a little, you know, bit of darkness in here.
Yeah.
And I think it's just, I thought it kind of fit, you know, sort of like little cynicism. That's mm-hmm. not how I always feel, but just the way this poem turned out.
Well, when I got there, when I got to that part. When the first time I read it, I remember thinking, well, yeah, that's where this poem was leading. I'm not sure why, but... well, I mentioned an earlier podcast with Andrea Potis, we were talking about Van Gogh, and I mentioned in one of his letters, he said something along the lines of, if I were God, I would regard the world as a study that didn't turn out right. Which is somewhat along the same lines as humans are the punchline in someone else's joke, and who else would be making the joke? But
And just for a little bit of natural history, the two lines in here about elephants remembering the bones of their dead is true. Mm-hmm. They're one of the few or maybe only animals that's known that if an elephant that they knew died and they can come back to the skeleton 3 years later and they'll, like, the whole herd will come up and, like, touch the bones. Mm-hmm. And they don't do that with any other bones. Mm-hmm. And other animals don't do that. Yeah.
Someone they knew.
So they actually do kind of know the bones of their dead. I just thought that was when I was another one of those little natural history facts that mm-hmm. I learned that made it into a poem.
What is the other part besides salt and water that humans are?
I don't know.
You don't know? Can't remember. Okay.
It's one of life's
salt,
mysteries.
Water, and something harder than salt or water. I don't know. But it's the same for men and women, right? It's not really true that
that
girls
is not
are sugar
thing
and spice and something. Everything.
That's not a science line. That's a metaphysical line.
Well, Jeannie, let's see.
Yeah, I have one more.
You have the Wee of Two Horses, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I love this one. Well, I love all of them, but anyway, I'll shut up.
The Wee of Two Horses. Even one in one's loneliness, the wee of our cats, or the wee of two horses in the autumn field, side to side, head to rump, they're muscular together. It's better with a wee, my mother said to me when I first met you, and I said again to you last Saturday morning as we watched the two geldings eating apples at the farm. And later, out of all the warblers east of the Mississippi, two had decided to take a bath together under the abandoned fire hydrant. They couldn't stop talking, it seemed. They had much to say. Today, I like the we in my friend's poem. We walked the prairie, she and I. We banded butterflies. Sometimes things happen to the we of our us, and it's a good word to say again, a word that wants to hold hands. September, prairie just past yellow, ready to flame into that color for which we have no name. And we still don't have a name for that color, because when the prairie's like that and we drive by or walk by, we say, what color is that? And we still don't have color, have a name for it. Mm-hmm.
But it is a color in nature.
It is color. Nice. Well, it's sort of a conglomeration of colors, you know. It's purple
and, it's only
and
there
brown.
For, and it's and... only there for a couple of days out of the year, maybe, if that. Or...
It'll fall.
Yeah.
It's there for, a little
while. A few days. I think
that won some prize, didn't it?
Yeah. That was the Wisconsin People and Ideas. I think it was second place.
Second place.
Second place.
Now, was that different from the Lorraine?
Yeah.
Was that a different
Niedecker
award?
Thing. Yeah,
that
was
a different one for
the
Council of Wisconsin.
The Lorraine.
And the Niedecker Prize is more for a body of work, or at least five poems, I think he sent in.
Would you like to do Prayer with Crow?
Should I, or should we do the one that we do together?
Go to the one together? Can you just say a little bit about how this one came to be? Because, I mean, it's one of the things I've been looking forward to is hearing you, because I've seen you read it, perform it, whatever, together, actually at Mystery to Me, I think, a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm. Did we have music, the music accompanying that?
Probably not there.
I don't
not
think
there.
So.
No.
No, I don't remember the
We have a
music.
Friend who's played mandolin.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I don't think so. No.
Yeah.
But I've, ever since then, I've wondered how it came to be. I mean, did you write it together, or how does one go about writing a poem together?
Well, no, I wrote this poem. We haven't for a while. Some poet friends around the state get together a couple times a year for what's called Poet Camp.
Oh.
Get together for a couple of days in a kind of a building up in central Wisconsin. Oh, okay. And like the daytime is all dedicated to just, you know, kind of being on your own and writing and quiet and reading. And then we get together at night and read poems and, you know, get together for meals during the day. And anyway, this was one of those poet camps, and came out of a walk I took, and just some of the words just kind of came to me. And it's, I mean, it has had, I'm sure it had a fair amount of editing. And, well, there is a little collaboration in it, in that Jeannie gave me the last two words, or maybe it's really the last four words of the poem.
I don't remember.
Well, that gives us a bit of suspense.
But I don't know how we decided to start reading it together.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that too.
I'm not sure either. I don't. We've done it a handful of times, and we have had our friend playing mandolin in the background one time. Lynn Patrick Smith played guitar. All right. Behind us.
Maybe that was the first time we did it.
I think it was the first time it was with Chris, the mandolin.
Oh, just at the poetry reading.
Yeah. But I don't know how we decided to do it.
Yeah.
Well, we are about to have a non-musical, not musically accompanied.
And it's different every time, so.
We don't plan it.
Well, so you don't divide up the stanzas?
No.
I mean, you don't have a regular room?
No.
Oh, cool.
Ready?
Yeah.
Okay. On the occasion of a day like any other, squabbling gray geese melt out of gray sky.
Gray sky.
Drop into a field, acres of yellow stubble
and snow.
And snow. Small damaged soldiers parading in rows, disappearing over a small rise.
A small rise.
I've seen this before.
I've seen this before.
Or something like it. Does it matter where or when? I want to say I can still be surprised. Surprised by the way snow changes from feathers to stinging pellets of ice and back again in a minute's time.
In a minute's time.
I can still be surprised by my heart's everyday beat, my lungs' insouciant rise and fall. I don't want to say there's magic in the ordinary or that the ordinary isn't. But what else can I say on a day the world twists towards the sun for the 20,000th time in my life?
In my life.
And the snow makes the most sensuous sound, shatters against the bone-brittle oak leaves still clutching their birdless branches.
One of the reasons I'm so glad that we could do this podcast with you together is just a lot of your poetry seems like an antidote to loneliness. This poem in particular.
Well, thanks. Well, thanks for giving us the opportunity.
Well, yeah, thanks for doing it. Thanks for welcoming us into your home. And what's coming up next? Are there readings coming up?
Well, now we're very lonely because neither of us are writing.
Oh. Well, maybe this will be the... Maybe this will be the thing.
Maybe. Well, I actually wrote one poem that I've been working on, but it's been a while since I've written a poem. But Steve's actually been publishing books.
I know. Yeah. Could you talk a little bit? It's Bent Paddle Press?
Bent Paddle Press. I guess the abbreviated version is I wanted to publish something of Jeannie's, which was actually a single poem. And I just had this idea of making it into a little booklet. And so we, I figured it had to have a press name, and we just kicked around some ideas and somehow came up with Bent Paddle Press. There's another thing besides not writing lately. We have not really been in our canoe much the last couple of years, but we do canoe and have bent paddles. anyway.
Bent on purpose?
Yeah. They have a bend.
They're not broken.
Then, actually, there was another, a whole manuscript of Jeannie's that just needed publishing. It was supposed to be published elsewhere, but that never came about. So I decided that it needed to be out there, and that's the collect of the day. Mm-hmm. And then, just from that, just because it's, I still don't know how long or how far this is going to go, but it seems to have taken on a life of its own. And I've published, three other poets now. Richard Merleman, Ronnie Hess, and soon to be out, hopefully next week, Ron Serwin.
Right. November 1st.
November 1st. Yeah. We're keeping our fingers crossed because we want it out while Ron actually has a reading on the 4th, I believe, or the 3rd. And then there's the WFOP conference on the 4th. So we hope it's out for that.
Oh, the Wisconsin Fellowship of Poets.
Yes.
Okay. I'm sure a lot of our listeners would have known that. I had to think for a second. Okay, so A Little Rain, A Little More by Ron
Serwin. There are a couple of, yeah. I guess I'll say Jeannie and I don't necessarily have readings coming up, but there are two bent paddle readings, meaning various bent paddle authors. There's one at the Village Booksmith in Baraboo, February 8th, I think. It's Friday night, and there will be four of the authors there reading.
February 8th, 2019, for those who are planning ahead.
Correct. Jeannie will be reading there, and actually Ronnie Hess, Ron Serwin, and Richard Merleman. Sharon Auberly, who's the other author, she co-author with Jeannie on the book Dovetail. Well, she lives in Door County. She's not going to make it.
And a painter.
And a painter, artist.
Did the postcards.
In general, yeah.
Check out the postcards on Jeannie and Steve's website.
Sharon is also the current Poet Laureate of Door County. And then there's another bent paddle reading at Mystery to Me in Madison that'll be during April Poetry Month, Thursday, April 11th.
All right.
And you can find info for both of those on our website.
Okay.
Look on the bent paddle part of our website.
Right. Well, those are two things that'll help us get through the winter. Or the first one, February one, will help us get through the winter, and we'll have the April one to look forward to in the spring. Wow. Well, thanks for doing this. Yeah, this was even more fun than I thought it would be. So.
Me too.
Thanks for having us, as they say on.
Yeah, as they say on talk shows.
Thank you for listening. The Fermat's Last Theater Podcast Project is funded in part by grants from the Wisconsin Arts Board, Madison Arts Commission, and Dane Arts.